Accession number 18630, Real 1.
Derek Diamond, Real 1. Can you tell me something about when and where you were born, please?
I was born in Ruislip, in the western suburbs of London. My father was an accountant working in central London, and by the time I was born in 1933, and by the time the war came, I had a younger brother and a still younger sister. And the proposal in the family was that mother plus the three children would go and stay with distant cousins in the North Island of New Zealand in a town called Hamilton. And that, in fact, is what happened.
Was there any reason why New Zealand was chosen other than that you had relatives there?
Not that I know of, only that it was to do with relatives. Because my family paid for the space, the shipping passages. It was, I would suppose, a private evacuation rather than a public evacuation.
Were you at school in Ruislip at the time?
I had just started at primary school, yes. And when I got to New Zealand, I resumed my primary school education.
So what was the procedure? What happened? Did you have to go to a specific port and meet a specific ship to go to New Zealand? And when was that?
What I remember is that in the late summer of 1940, we packed a lot of suitcases and we went on a train from London to Southampton, where we went on a boat called Rangitiki, a New Zealand steamship company boat, the Rangitiki, at Southampton. However, after about 2 days on the boat, we were all sent home again. The boat didn't sail with the evacuees from Southampton because, as I learned afterwards, I was told by my parents that it was thought very dangerous to sail a ship with lots of women and children, about 2,000 in all, I think, through the Channel in 1940, and also that there was a story that the Germans had invented some new kind of dangerous magnetic mine, and it was possible for the ship's hull to be treated in some way as to make this less effective. Anyway, I'm not sure about the truth of those, but anyway, we did return home, and about 3 weeks later, we went on a train to Clyde Bank, where we got on the same boat, which had obviously sailed without its passengers from Southampton, and we were part of a convoy which left Clyde Bank to sail across the Atlantic to the Panama Canal and then across the Pacific to Wellington, New Zealand.
Was there a lot of these private evacuations like yourselves, or was there some evacuations of other children on a more organised official level on the ship?
I really don't know the answer to that. I know subsequently that there were a lot of evacuees who went to Canada, and in some way or other, which I'm not clear of, were assisted by the government. But I know in our case that the ship was returning to New Zealand to collect food supplies for Britain and maybe troops, and was just completely full of women and children. It was a very fully, if not overcrowded, boat. The ship is a fairly large passenger liner, I think in the range about 19,000 tons, and certainly as we set sail, I can remember very vividly as a child being on the deck of the ship, looking at the sea all around you when you were out of sight of land, just sea, but the sea was covered with ships. I was told later that we were the largest ship in the convoy, other than the naval boats, and that we were in the middle of the convoy, and around us were all these smaller ships, which were freighters in the main, cargo vessels of one kind or another. And in every direction that you looked, standing as a small boy, age 7, at the rail of the ship, looking out across the sea, it seemed that the sea was just full of ships, because in every direction, almost uniformly, each from the other, spaced apart, were ships, ships, and more ships. And it was on an evening, almost at dusk, just as the light was going, and I remember my mother saying, "Come on now, it's time to go to bed," when there was a very large bang, apparently out of the blue, an enormous bang, an explosion. And a ship which I was looking at, which was next to us but a bit in front, simply stood up vertically and just disappeared below the sea. In what I recall now, must have been a matter of a few seconds, certainly a very short period of time, between the bang, the ship appearing to stand up in the sea with its bow in the sky, and simply disappear below the sea.
Was this a few days out of Clydebank?
I believe so. I think a very few days out of Clydebank. I understand afterwards that this was somewhere off the northern coast of Northern Ireland. And subsequently, another convoy, later than ours, had a much more disastrous occurrence when the large passenger ship taking evacuees to Canada was in fact sunk, and there was a large loss of life. But on this occasion, what I remember happening next was the approach of what I now realise must have been the destroyer came past very rapidly past the ship that I was on, and then there were these enormous spouts of water which shot into the sky, which I realise now must have been the depth charges going off as the destroyer was apparently trying to deter or sink the German submarine. However, after this event, it was decided both for the fact that we were attracting the attention of the German submarines, and partly because I was told that our ship could not go at the speed, could not go so slowly and comfortably as the speed of the convoy, which clearly has to travel at the speed of the slowest ship in the convoy. So we were given permission to leave the convoy, and I remember watching as the ships which had been on the sea around us in every direction gradually began to disappear, and eventually they were only visible behind us on the next day. And after that we saw no more ships and no more convoys until we reached the entrance to the Panama Canal, which again I remember as a small boy being quite an extraordinary thing as to how you take these ships through these locks and how these little engines on the side of the locks towed the ship along, and then you sailed through the lakes and then you went down another set of locks again with these little engines on the side which pulled the ship into the lock, and then its water went out and the ship went down, and eventually we reached the Pacific Ocean. At this point on our journey to New Zealand, it was thought that we were out of the war zone and that it would be good to relax, and therefore there was a big children's party held. And I remember only because the next day my mother was very nervous and we were all kept with our life jackets on for a whole day, because we had had balloons at the party and the balloons had been released, and it was only then that it was reported that there may be a Japanese raider loose in this part of the Pacific. And of course, as a British ship, British Empire ship, we were at war with Japan.
Was this 1940?
In 1940. Is that right?
You went to war with Japan in 1941, 42? Would it be a German raider?
Well, perhaps it must have been then a German raider. Anyway, we were all told not to throw anything overboard because, like the balloons, people, enemy forces, if they had come across this, would have been able, by wind and currents, to trace where the ship was. Maybe my memory is wrong on that, then it should have been a German raider in the Pacific, but my memory tells me it was Japanese, but it's very early, isn't it? Too early for the Japanese. And the journey took 3 weeks across the Atlantic and 3 weeks across the Pacific. So all told, it's a journey of 6 weeks to reach Wellington, from where we took the train and went to Hamilton in the middle of the North Island, and stayed for some weeks with our cousins while we found a house to rent. And then we moved into this house, which I remember well, which was my home for the next 5 years, and was not at a very great distance from these cousins who also lived in Hamilton.
Can I just ask you about the journey across on the boat? What was the accommodation like on board for those 6 weeks?
I don't remember very clearly the conditions, except that it was very crowded. There were always lots of children about. I know that we had one cabin with the four of us in, mother and children aged 7, 5 and 3. It must have been a very tough exercise, almost distressing exercise for a middle class mother to transport 3 children. We'd had a nanny at home and we didn't take the nanny with us, so mother was fully responsible in these difficult circumstances for 3 very young children who didn't fully understand, of course, at all what was happening around them.
What were the weather conditions like during the journey?
They can't have been very bad because I have no memory of them at all. I remember lots of sunshine in the Pacific Ocean. That's all, bright, shining blue sea in the Pacific Ocean.
Did you see any aircraft at all while you were?
No, I don't recall seeing any aircraft at all.
And you'd arrived in Hamilton. What were your first impressions of New Zealand?
I only remember it as a friendly place. Everybody was friendly, and it seemed a very, very nice place to be. The house we lived in backed onto a small lake which had a park in it and was used by all the people, citizens in the town. It was a nice place to play. And literally across the road and a few hundred yards up the road was the primary school that I attended. And I don't have other than very happy memories. I don't remember any major disasters or difficulties of life in New Zealand at all as a young boy. Going to primary school, playing football and rugby. One thing I do remember, at school, which was definitely very New Zealand, was that we sat in small wooden desks, a class of, I think, around 30 children in my class, and I shared a desk with a pupil who was always late to school, was never there at the beginning of school, and often arrived quite late, 10 o'clock, 11 o'clock in the morning after school had started at 9, and often then promptly went to sleep. And I remember the teacher telling me, be careful not to wake him up. He has walked a very long way to come to school. And he was one of the Maori children that came to school from a rural district, I don't know how far away, but he'd obviously walked for an hour or 2 hours in order to get to school. And this accounted for his lateness and for his falling asleep during lessons very often. The other thing about the primary school that I remember well is during the war, the New Zealand government devised an intriguing strategy for the disposal of the surplus apple crop, which because of the shortage of shipping, of course, could no longer be sent to their markets in Europe and particularly in Britain. And so at the end of lessons each day, two children were always selected to go to the end of the school and collect from the corner of the playground or somewhere these crates of apples. They were apples all wrapped in tissue paper, just as if they were ready for export. And the crates were brought back to the classroom, and you had to distribute the apples amongst the children in the class, which meant that many days in the week, I can't remember exactly how many, but on many occasions, each child would go home with 2, 3, or even 4 apples. Well, of course, you could eat one, but being aged 8, 9, 10, these apples were really missiles that the children threw at each other, and some went astray and went through the neighbouring houses' windows and so on the way home from school. I'm sure some of the apples were eaten, but not all of them. But anyway, the apples were given to the children as a kind of scheme by which apples could still be consumed without being exported.
Was there any other kind of food rationing that you noticed at that time?
I don't remember any hardship or rationing in New Zealand. Rationing really struck me on my return to Britain after the war.
So you could get milk and butter and
milk
eggs.
And butter and eggs and meat. I think these things were in excess supply actually in New Zealand during the war, since their markets had in the main been cut off from them. One episode that perhaps epitomizes New Zealand at this time was that I became ill. I don't know exactly how, but I contracted jaundice as a schoolboy, and I spent something like 5 weeks in hospital recovering from this infection of the liver. And when I was fit enough to leave the hospital, it was arranged through some friends of our cousins that I would go and fully recuperate by staying on a sheep farm some 2 or 3 hours drive from Hamilton. I don't remember the precise location, but I do remember spending a very wonderful 4 or 5 weeks being completely, really wild on the sheep farm. I remember no one asked you to have a bath each night, no one made you change your clothes, no one worried, and I simply travelled with the sheep farmer on his rounds, and I remember playing around with the family in the sheep farm, the children in the farmyard, and my mother was somewhat upset when all this had to come to an end, and I returned home to Hamilton, and I was made to have a bath, and my clothes were washed very severely for the first time for a long time. But I think this does illustrate somewhat, that most people in New Zealand at this time were concerned with farming activities, and life on the farms was really still in a very simple stage.
Did you notice any civil defence activities or home guard units?
There were only two ways in which three perhaps, I recognised why the war was on. I mean, one, I knew that my father was far away in Britain and that correspondence was difficult, and that mother used to write regularly every week, and everything was a great day when the mail from England arrived and we had news of what was happening to our family in England. The other way in which I learnt about the war was through occasionally seeing troops in the town. The area was around Hamilton was obviously used as a training area, because there were regularly troops who came on exercises in the extensive rural areas, these bush areas, not farmed and not occupied. And I, as a young boy, my pride and possession was my bicycle. And I remember clearly being punished by my mother, who took my bicycle away from me for a period of time, like 2 weeks, because I'd spent the whole day cycling around with the troops watching this training exercise. I might say amongst many other young boys at the weekend, presumably. We weren't at school or in the school holidays. Simply bicycling along, watching these military exercises, which took all day to take place, and so my mother didn't know where I was for a whole 10 hours or something. Obviously a worrying time for her, but I can remember it with great enjoyment. But perhaps the most important way in which I learnt about the war was that we had in our living room a big map of Europe on the wall, and we had a set of flags, and as various places were mentioned in the news, we were able to put the flags on the right place. So the invasion of Sicily, the invasion of Italy, and eventually the Normandy landings, we were able to mark these places. And I think this close contact with maps helped me to be very map oriented. Being evacuated and being a long distance from home and having to understand the different locations of these places, I think made me very interested in geography. I wouldn't say it was the only reason I became a professor of geography subsequently, but it made me very interested in geography. I like geography very much.
But you didn't see any air raid precautions, that sort of thing, in New Zealand?
No, we didn't have an air raid shelter. We didn't. I don't remember civil defence exercises, and I don't recall any conflict event occurring in New Zealand.
So New Zealand was basically continuing the civilian life of the 1930s. During this period, would you say?
I would say so. I would say so. Although I'm sure that for adults, the involvement, the Japanese involvement in the war and the invasion of the Japanese to New Guinea and the bombing of an Australian city of Darwin must have made a difference to adults, but it certainly didn't make any impression on a primary schoolboy in Hamilton during these years.
So how did you come to leave New Zealand?
it's a little bit of a coincidence. As soon as the war was over in Europe, my mother tried to book a passage back, of course, to Britain. Shipping was scarce, and there were lots of troops to be returned to Britain from various parts of the Pacific, and it took some time to get a berth on the ship. In fact, I think that was facilitated because in 1945 my father had been elected an MP for a constituency in Manchester, and that maybe would have helped us to get some kind of priority in the booking of passages back to England. The coincidence was that we sailed from Wellington on the same ship, the Rangitiki, that we had come to New Zealand on 5 years before. So that was a coincidence